Alright, time for another draftphysics.com. Debatephysics.com also, but still seeking a proper forum for debate. Even something moderated. You know, just to keep things within perspective. And, but whatever. I mean, I don't mind a little contentiousness, but obviously others use it as an excuse to run away and blah, blah, blah. So, whatever. So, we do have a comment. What about terminal velocity? So, it gives me an excuse to talk about velocity in general and momentum and how that's how everything really works. You go all the way to the simplest universe and it's really just about momentum. Just about adding up a bit of energy, a bit of something moving, that when it hits something else, it's going to either, well, frankly, it's going to share its energy. You know, it's not ever going to do anything else. Because on the elemental level, the stuff really just can't stop having its property. It can't stop going in a direction, and all you're really saying is how much is it pushing. So that sort of terminal velocity sort of illustrates that, but in a sloppier, more materialistic, less elemental form. But it's sort of like the comparison between a galaxy or a solar system and the atom. You can make the analogy. You can make the comparison, and it has something to do, with how it actually works. On the smaller level. All right, so we'll try to fix cameras so they do more useful work for us. This one probably could use a little bit too. Oh, I don't know why it always goes crooked on me. But, it's okay. Good enough is good enough. Perfect, we don't really need that. But frankly, shouldn't need that. Let's keep saying it shouldn't be that way. Damn, that crookedness, that really does annoy me. Anyway, all right, so for terminal velocity, it's kind of easy to explain that there is no such thing in space. And so the only place that there's some restriction to how fast something can go is when it's plowing through something. So when you're plowing through it, whether you're going through it like an atmosphere, like you're trying to break the sound barrier or something, and you're rolling on the ground and trying to get through the crap, you have to sort of force the issue. You have to go through a lot of atmosphere. You have to push stuff, and the stuff you're pushing has mass, and so it's going to take away from your velocity. You have to use your energy to give the stuff in front of you that you're pushing energy, so you can't go as fast because you have to push more mass. So terminal velocity is just that in the opposite. So the atmosphere gets, let's say the atmosphere gets thicker, and we'll represent thicker by more bits. So at the top of the atmosphere, it's thin, there isn't too many atoms for you to have to push, gets thicker and thicker, and then you start getting to even thermal issues where you have patches of thickness, moving up, and then places where there's less stuff going down. The atmosphere is doing the moving the moisture up, and then it only comes down when it rains or it's stuck in a cloud. So there is no such thing as like a constant of terminal velocity. The terminal velocity keeps changing, as you change what you're going through. And the obvious thing is like you see with the sound thing, with something trying to go fast, you start having to shape your, vessel in a way where you can get rid of all these things to push. You can dispose of them without having to actually push them. You just deflect them. So you try to do that. So you can change your terminal, the velocity, say if you're a person free falling. You can obviously change your terminal velocity by just, putting your arms out, putting your feet together, trying to change your profile so you're as small as possible going into this bunch of atoms that you have to push. So if you can, make it so there's only a small number that stick to you, well, then you can go faster. And if you make it the other way and just kind of lay out flat, with everything spread out and try to be as big as you can be, that's probably the wrong way to, there's no way to draw that, right, this angle, without just drawing a head with feet sticking out of the other end. So if you go in flat, versus pointy, you'll make a difference. Your terminal velocity will be a different number. So it's really just about how much air you're catching. So you could equate this to a sailboat. You could just say your sailboat can only go so fast. You have a constant wind, let's say, pushing you. But the problem is you have this friction. You have the water you have to plow through and you have to push. And yes, you try to push it sideways and you can put little vents on it. You can do different things to try to make your boat have less contact and to push as much stuff away from you, deflect it, versus having to push it. But even the deflection is a time, an amount of time, right, that the stuff will still be stuck to you. So you're still stuck with it for a certain period of time. So no matter how streamlined your shape, you have all kinds of little turbulences and different things. So you're creating all kinds of stuff that's still stuck and you still have to push it. And so that's really just the only issue, is that you're taking your mass and you're having to push stuff. And then when the stuff is actually moving towards you, well, then this makes it even worse, because now its velocity is trying to push you the opposite direction. So you have even more of a problem getting your arrow of momentum to, impart to flow through the stuff, because it's taking away your direction with its direction. So it's making you weaker and weaker. And then you have the extra mass you're collecting is making you weaker. And so this is why there is a terminal velocity, but it's not a real thing. Like I say, so if I come in like the space shuttle and I plow in it going, 10,000 miles an hour, it's probably something more like 5, but let's say it's 10. And I get through the first part of the atmosphere, I'm already violating the terminal velocity, even though there's only a few atoms, that's enough atoms where I'm plowing through it, fast. So fast that there's going to have to be heat. I'm going to have to start breaking stuff and causing a bunch of extra friction, because I'm really going faster than the pressure. The pressure is high enough where I'm sort of violating what would be an equal balance between the two, and so I'm kind of forcing an issue. And so it's not going to be about an even amount. So the idea when you're free falling is you find a position, you reach 100 miles an hour, let's say, about that, and there'll be an equal amount of pressure from the matter that's not going your way, are going the opposite way, and you. So the 9.8 meters per second that gravity's pushing you is equal to the amount of crap you have below you pushing the opposite way. The amount you've compressed that you have to deal with all the time, have to push. But you could violate it, so it's not like you can't go that fast. You can go faster. Something can push you, put a rocket on yourself, and you can go 130 miles an hour, but now you're going to start getting hot, because now you're going, you're pushing harder into the pressure, and you're, forcing the issue, in the sense that you're increasing the pressure of the pressure you're pushing into by pushing harder on it. You're just collecting more mass, and it's more mass than is an even balance. And because it's not an even balance, it's this side is pushing harder and you're pushing, I don't know how to say that exactly, but anyway, you can get the idea that it's just all these molecules now have to move much faster, and it's faster than they can move without causing damage, that is, without denting things and breaking things. And so atoms are breaking and ionizing. I guess that's a good way to say it. You're ionizing the atoms because the friction is too harsh now. The speed you're hitting with is faster than they can just roll off of you. So atoms aren't rolling off of you anymore. They're smashing into you, breaking, and releasing bits of energy. All right. Well, most of that was useful, and so we'll go to the bigger, deeper story, since we have an excuse to do it. More on the atomic or subatomic level. Really subatomic, I guess. We'll start there and show how it's really just about momentum. Alright, so in a way, terminal velocity is just a way of, another way of saying there's drag in the universe. Okay, that if you're going to plow through something, it's going to absorb your energy, and even if you have a constant force like gravity pushing you, it's absorbing your energy as quickly as you are getting energy put into you. So you're getting 9.8 meters per second, but you're pushing 9.8 meters per second into into the extra pressure that the atmosphere is going to feel. So it's not only those molecules aren't even, they're obviously still in gravity also, the air, but you're giving it more velocity. You're pushing another 9.8 meters per second on those particular atoms that you hit, and by doing that, whatever the fuck that was, you're giving away some of your momentum, and you lose it all. And so if gravity didn't keep pushing you, you would just grind to a halt. So just like friction on a road, I give you a velocity. If I don't keep pushing you, you'll just roll to a stop, because eventually you'll give all of your energy to the ground. All right. And some to the air that you pushed. All right. So drag is really all we're talking about. And are there some ways to overcome the drag? Because in theory, I'm arguing that the universe is itself an atmosphere. So, you know, it's got stuff in it, okay? It's not empty space, so to speak. So a wrench flies through empty space, I throw it, and theoretically it just keeps going. So it's not encountering any mass or any matter or any force that's countering its motion. That is, it's not plowing into anything, apparently. But that's just because it's apparent. Because there's a mechanism that allows it to do that. And the mechanism is somewhere in this very, very small universe. It's not in the obvious big universe. It's a subatomic feature, not a atomic feature, or not even a big object feature. All right, so you always have to think that no matter what something's doing, the small universe is doing it first. So that would be the principle. The principle is the little bits are really the only bits that are actually doing something. Electrons and protons are you. You're doing what electrons and protons are doing. You're not doing what you're doing as a big object. You're doing what this, the little universe inside of you is doing. And everything you're doing, okay, is a byproduct of them doing stuff at the speed of light. So all of their calculations that end up being the byproduct that is you is happening in a universe moving much faster than your universe. I mean, we can barely understand a second. You know, we say, oh, a second, okay, that's, you know. And the real universe is doing, you know, 300,000 events in that second. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on that you don't get to be part of, to be conscious of or aware of or any of that crap, to calculate, because it's too many little events, and you're made of that, so you can't do that. You can't see it. It's so dense and so fast. But anyway, so the idea is the universe is just made out of stuff moving in a direction, right? And it could be stuff, you know, moving in all kinds of directions, towards or away. And the idea would be is that any piece of stuff, okay, going in a direction, the idea would be as if the stuff did hit each other and bounce, that there's a certain average distance, you could argue, between the stuff, so that something going this way and something going this way, you could say that the event happens at an average interval, where the pressure from this side, the stuff moving this way, encounters the stuff moving this way. So if I did put a piece of matter in, and the rule was, you know, that the stuff hits this side, it moves that way, it hits it this way, it moves that way, there's a certain jitter it would have, okay, in the field. And obviously that's in three dimensions. So there's a certain amount of motion the object would have, just because it's in a universe full of stuff going in all these directions and hitting it. So you could understand that I could call that a Planck thing. I could say this is the Planck unit would be the distance that this electron, let's say, would be moved just by the laws of averages in terms of it's constantly being hit. Yes, and sometimes it's going this way and it gets hit by a bit and only travels a tiny little distance before it encounters something going this way, which cancels it, right? So this would cancel that, is the idea. And so it only goes a little tiny bit, and then sometimes it goes a longer bit. So obviously the Planck would be an average of, you know, you went a little bit this way this time, the next time you went this far that way, and then the next time you went this far that way, and then you went this far that way, and you know, but you average it all out, it all comes out to the same thing. You never go in any direction as long as it's the same amount of energy from both sides. All right, so that's just understanding that's, I'm arguing as a draft, that's the real elemental universe, okay? And that the simple rule is that there is a first cause in the sense that, okay, let's say I had two electrons. And we're saying they reflect each other. So any bit that hits an electron, okay, it bounces off and it goes to the other electron, and then it bounces off of that and goes to this electron. Now the idea of it bouncing would be that, let's say I'm moving an electron and a bit hits it and is pushing it. That's what it's actually doing. It's actually pushing it. Okay, so it was going the speed of light, now it's going half the speed of light. Let's just say the electron weighs the same as the force. It doesn't really matter, for the sake of argument. So that's a simple little, you know, kinematic interaction. It's inelastic in the sense that it sticks. Okay, both objects move based on the total mass. Now they have a velocity. The velocity is slower, okay, than the normal speed that this bit of force would be moving. So the bit is not going to be where it would be. So a half second later, or half millisecond later, it should be here, but because it's pushing a piece of matter, it's only here, okay? And so it's going to encounter the force going this way later than it would have, right? So the compensating force isn't going to show up until a unit of time distant from when it would have hit it, okay? And it's going to be in a different position when it hits it. So it would have hit it here, the counterforce, but now it's going to hit it here later, okay? It's going to have to wait for it because, you know, it's going to happen in a different position in space. And so that reflection from this is now going to be from here, right? So it's behind. This piece of force is now going to be delayed because of this delay. This delay is going to mean the force going this way that would have been the reflection is going to take a while. So anyway, it's actually quicker for the reflection because the object that was going to cause the reflection was here and now it's here. So you can see, so this is where it gets a little complicated. You have to follow all these bouncing balls. And it's a lot of it to follow. So this force bit can't hit the other force bits, right? So the first, I gave you an analogy where the force hits the force. Well, it doesn't happen that way. So technically, this has to, well, you could argue it does happen that way. So yeah, there's no point in me making that rule. All right, so for this, the force bits are now going to hit each other at a different time. That's guaranteed. It's not the same place in time, okay? I don't even want to imply that time is a place. Oh, I'm sorry I said that. Yeah, it won't happen at the same time. And that means the universe will be in a different condition when it does happen. So that's the part I want to emphasize. All right, so the real point is that when this reflection, so I'm saying that this is basically a card, you could argue. So you're going to put energy in by having something hit the surface. So a piece of energy is going to hit it, and it's going to move it. Okay, it's going to give it momentum. And if you argue, it's got another electron back here. Okay, so this is now going to reflect. And when is it going to reflect? It's going to reflect when it hits the counterforce. So when the counterforce hits, you know, when the opposite thing, the universe just has right and left, and it has an equal amount of left and an equal amount of right. So when it finally hits, which could be any time, right? It could be that the force bit is here, it could be that it's here, it could be that it's here. So when it hits is going to be semi-random, but it's within a limit. It can't be a year from now, and the, you know, it's going to be within some range of, you know, between 7 and 10. You know, it's not going to be 15, and it's not going to be 2. All right, anyway. So, well, it could be 2. See, it's so tricky. Somewhere between 0 and 8. Can't be any more than 8. Just very improbable to ever have a larger time unit than 8. But anyway, so it's going to travel a certain distance. It got hit. It's going to do the pushing thing. It's going to push the thing. All right, got hit. It's going to push it. And now it's going to go a certain amount of distance before it hits a counterforce that will cause this to reflect. And the force bit will reflect. And now this will be neutral again. It won't have any motion. It lost the pusher it had, okay, and it didn't. This one didn't stick because there was one already going this way. So it already had one going this way. It plowed into one going the opposite direction. Those two just reflect, and now it's left with nothing. So, yeah. So, but the argument is let's say you understood that now it's just going to do this reflecting back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and it's going to reflect based on when it hits energy. So in the direction it's moving, right, it started going this way. It's going to technically run into more of this stuff, right, because it's moving towards the stuff coming towards it. So in a certain unit of time, it's going to hit more of these than it can possibly hit coming from the opposite direction, right? It's running away from these, so it's going to hit these less often, and it's going to hit these more often, all right? And yet it somehow has to overcome that. And I would argue that part of what overcomes that is this, the fact that it started going this way. And so all you're really changing is the time it allowed to go back this way. You're not really changing its ability to go forward again, because it is going to reflect off this back wall, and it is going to hit this wall again. So this part, where it reflects, and then it goes back again, that's an equal substance. And all you're really doing, I mean, it really doesn't matter. If you make this distance going this way, the cart moving this way, if I make that arrow this long, and I make the arrow going back only this long because it hits something, or I make it this long because it doesn't hit anything, it doesn't really matter because the arrow's still coming back this way. And this one's always going to be a first cause. It's always going to be I'm hitting you forward. And all you're really changing is how much time it moves it forward. So what you're really saying is I'm going to take something that hits it and goes forward. So the cart, let's say there was no force coming this way. Well, that means the cart would just keep going. It would go this way, right? I hit it forward, it goes forward. This reflects, hits the back wall, okay, and that's going to cause it to stop, right? That's the same thing as this arrow hitting this arrow, which means nothing happens, right? The two reflect. So back here is where a force going this way hits a force going this way, and the matter stops. So that's when the forces just reflect and the thing stops. But obviously, this reflection's going into the universe. This reflection is going to hit the front again. So I'm essentially redoing this first cause. And I never can undo the first cause. So if I capture something going in this, so all I'm really saying is that, like, if so I can have it go, it'll go forward, then it'll stop based on when it finally hits this. So it's only going to go forward as long as the distance it gets to travel before it hits this force coming this way. So this force is going to hit sooner or later. It's moving forward, but sooner or later this force is going to hit, which will reflect this. First I have to do the stop. I'm sorry. Okay, hit it forward. It's not hitting any new force yet, but the force coming this way will hit. Okay, eventually. And that will also stop the cart. So you have to understand there's two sides to it. The pushing side has gotten weaker, and the drag side has gotten stronger. Probably need to erase her somewhere. It's barely in the picture. Barely. You can see barely. Maybe I can draw over here. All right. So again, you have to keep track of, you know, all the actions that are happening. So the first act is this goes in and it pushes the object. Now the object is going to reflect when it hits this counterforce. Now it's going to hit it sooner than it would have because it's moving forward. Okay. And then it's going to reflect this way. And if there's this other electron back here, all right, it's going to now reflect off of that electron. First it's going to push it, right? You know, technically, unless it's already going this way, it's going to push it this way, and then it's going to reflect when it finally gets hit. So obviously the length that goes this direction, okay, which is the distance when it's going forward, as long as this line is going that way. So when the force reflects, when it hits the cart, it sticks and it moves. When it hits the counterforce, it starts going backwards. Backwards, it's not going to hit anything for a while, so the cart doesn't go. So the point is the cart goes forward from the initial hit. Then it stops because the force is reflected off the front of the box. And the cart now is stopped. So if we had an arrow for movement, it's moving. Then it stops, okay? And there's a time period it says stopped. And the time period will be how long it takes for the bit to get to the back electron and end up hitting a force coming the opposite way and being reflected. So it's kind of a long time stopped. But eventually it's going to go again. So, yeah, it spends more time going this way than the arrow spends going this way. But that doesn't matter. Because the only thing that's going to matter is this arrow is the first arrow. This one is always the first one. So this one finally terminates here, and then this one reflects forward, and again hits it eventually again. Okay, so it spends more time stopped than it spends moving, but it doesn't stop moving in the direction it initiated. So unless some other force hits it, some added force, it is going to keep going this way until you add a force going the opposite way. Until you put something inside the box is going to keep saying, I'm going this way. So that's how you defeat drag on this subatomic way. All right, like I said, this was the draft drawing, but the idea is just to, maybe I'll erase this and just try to do the basic idea one more time. But the real catch is that, yes, it's going to move slower than it would if there was no field it's plowing into, but it's still going to move in this direction instead of just going back and forth. It's not going to lose this initial action until you actually get force inside and cause other force to do the opposite of what the force you put in the box did. So it's what's in the box that matters, not what the outside world is necessarily doing. The outside world can't change what you put inside and what direction it had when you put it inside. You can't change that. All right, you can only change how fast it jitters in the forward direction, but you can't stop it from moving forward. All right, yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, I'll just wait for another video to, do it a little better. Yeah, and that's all. It's just doing it more coherently without making mistakes. But you can sort of get the idea that there's a difference between what's inside the box, what the first act was. And the first act is always going to be a preserved act. It's like you could sort of understand why a circle keeps spinning. You push energy in, and all of these actions, the going down, going back up, the going up, they just compensate for restoring it to its original condition eventually. But you'll always end up still going this. You still end up doing the first act over again, because it just gets you back to where you were when the first act happened. Is that the best way to say it? But yes, that's all. You can't take away the fact that you have consumed, you own a piece of energy going this way, and that's what you really do own. The system can't take that away. All right. Well, it's not exactly that either. So, yeah. Exact words are going to require, some technical precision, some work. But anyway, we'll call it enough of a video. All right. So, till the next time and such. This has been DraftPhysics.com, DebatePhysics.com also. And such. I mean, it really is. Look, the universe is just made out of force and matter. Just as you're seeing it here. Okay, electrons and protons, they could be the same size. They probably are the same size because the charges are equal strengths. But regardless. And they're just reflecting the force that hits them. And those reflections can be caught between them. And that's why matter is thought to have energy, is because matter that's caught in an atom, in fact, is usually trapping energy between the little bits. It's bouncing back and forth between the electrons and the protons. The protons are reflecting back and forth to repel each other. The electrons are reflecting back and forth to repel each other, and that repulsive energy is stored in the atom. It's trapped in the atom. You can sort of see it there. So you see how it's all kind of multiplying, and that's why matter has energy. If matter was alone in the universe, that is, if the electrons alone in the universe, it only has the energy of any momentum you give it, that is, any motion it has. But without the motion, it doesn't have any energy. What you're seeing in the simulation is just what's moving here are Maxwell's drawings. Okay, this is what charge does. It radiates. Okay, a force that has an inverse relationship to protons and electrons. The proton force, the red force, reflects protons, and the blue force, reflects blue force. The blue objects reflect blue force. All right, anyway. So, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Yeah, that's enough. I guess we could go to a black screen. Yeah. The end and such.